5, chapter number 12, the book and now converses with Jagmara, text 11. Jnanam Shuddham Paramartham Ekam
Jnanam Shuddham Paramartham Ekam
Ananda-bhava-bhi-rambha
satyam
Jnanam Visuddham Paramartham Ekam
Anantaram
Tvabhavi Brahma Satyam
Pratyak
Prashantam Bhagavat Shabda Sangyam
Pratyak
Prashantam Bhagavat Shabda
Sangyanam
Jnanam Visuddham Paramartham Ekam
Anantaram
Tvabhavi Brahma Satyam
Pratyak
Prashantam Bhagavat Shabda Sangyam Yad Vasudevam Kavo Vadanti
Jnanam, the supreme knowledge. Vishuddham,
without contamination.
Paramartham, giving the ultimate goal of life. Ekam,
unified.
Anantaram,
without interior.
Unbroken.
Two,
also.
Abhi.
Without exterior.
Brahma.
The Supreme.
Satyam.
Absolute truth.
Pratyak.
Inner.
Prashantam.
The calm and peaceful Supreme Lord.
Worshipped by the yogis.
Bhagavat Shabda Sangyam.
Known in the highest sense as Bhagavan,
or full of all opulences.
Yet, that.
Vasudevam.
Lord Krishna.
The son of Vasudev.
Kavaya.
The learned scholars.
Vadanti.
Say. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Shri Prabhupada. Translation. What then is the ultimate truth? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. It is the one without a second, all-pervading and beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman. Then Paramatma, the super soul, is realized by the yogis who try to see him without grievance. This is the second stage of realization. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized in the Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe the Supreme Person as Vasudev, the cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Yad Advaitam, Brahmo Kamishavi, Tad Api Asya Tanuha. The impersonal Brahman effulgence of the Absolute Truth consists of the bodily rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ya Atman Taryami Pusha Iti So Asyamsha Vibhava. What is known as Atma and Antaryami, the Super Soul, is but an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sad Aishwarya Purno Yaiha Bhagavan, Sa Swayam Ayar. What is described as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete with all six opulences, is Vasudev, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from him. Great learned scholars and philosophers accept this after many, many words. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sarvamatma Sudhiva, Bhagavad Gita 10:19. The wise man can understand that ultimately Vasudev, Krishna, is the cause of Brahman and Paramatma, the Super Soul. Thus Vasudev is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. The real tattva, absolute truth, is number one. But due to incomplete realization of the absolute truth, people sometimes describe the same Vishnu as impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma. Vadantita tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam rameti paramatmeti anavahiti shantite bhagavatam 1.2.11. From the very beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Satyam Param Dhimahi. We meditate on the Supreme Truth. Thank you. The Supreme Truth is explained here as Jnanam Vishuddham Satyam. The Absolute Truth is devoid of material contamination and is transcendental to the material qualities. It gives all spiritual success and liberation from this material world. That Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna, Vasudev. There is no difference between Krishna's inner self and outward body. Krishna is Purna, the complete whole. There is no distinction between his body and soul as there is between us. Sometimes so-called scholars, not knowing the constitutional position of Krishna, mislead people by saying that the Krishna within is different from the Krishna without. When Krishna says, Manmana Bhavama Bhakto, Madhyaji Ma Namaskuru, so-called scholars advise the reader that it is not the person Krishna to whom we must surrender, but the Krishna within. So-called scholars, Mayavadis, cannot understand Krishna with a poor fund of knowledge. One should therefore approach an authorized person to understand Krishna. The spiritual master has actually seen Krishna, therefore he can explain him properly. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya pratekshanti te jnana jnaninastattva dakshina Bhagavad Gita 4:34. Without approaching an authorized person, one cannot understand Krishna. Om jnanati mandasya jnanina shakaya chakshurun mukitanina tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything and the cause of all causes, Sarva Karana Karanam. And everything in existence that is within our perception and beyond is an emanation from the Supreme Lord. And even Brahman and Paramatma are two features of Krishna, and they're the expansions of the Lord too. So the goal of life, Apatho Brahma Jigyasa, the goal of life is to understand the Supreme Lord. That's the whole purpose of the human life. And there's no other purpose. All other so-called purposes that we manufacture are secondary. And life is meant to seek out God. That's what life is meant for. That's why we've been given this chance that's why we've been given this human body, this chance to be in a human body, to understand Krishna, to realize God. But unfortunately, most people don't do it. As Krishna says in the 7th chapter, Manushya naam sarasveshu kaschid yathvi siddhaye yathatam abhisiddha naam kaschid maam vedhitatvadaha. So he says, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So Krishna says that to come to the stage of Bhagavan realization is very, very rare. It's a very rare person who will understand the Supreme Lord, who will actually understand in truth and even make an endeavor to understand. So we see that the vast majority of people are simply engaged in sense gratification. And Krishna describes them as muras. So mura means someone who is not very intelligent. So in fact, the majority of people are just wasting their life in trying to find happiness in various ways. So whatever people say, whatever makes you happy, do that. I remember my family said, okay, if you're engaged in spiritual life, it's fine, whatever makes you happy. Someone else, it might be something else. So that should be respected. Yeah, we respect everyone, but it is not possible to find happiness through material means. So majority of people are simply engaged in the main pursuit of happiness, whether it is through sports or music or literature or maybe jumping off a cliff or eating food, trying different types of food or going to pubs. You name it, there's a million types of ways to enjoy. And yes, there is some happiness in it, but that happiness is temporary. So an intelligent person understands that there is something beyond this, and by engaging in those pursuits, it simply leads to frustration. That's the end result. It leads in frustration. So the vast majority of people are engaged in getting food, sex life, and trying to find some shelter, trying to put a shelter above themselves. And today that has become very difficult due to rising prices. So even such basic needs have become very challenging. So materialist person thinks that the aim of life is to gratify my senses. That's the prime goal of life. But the issue with that, as I mentioned, is such endeavor is full of trouble. When we engage in seeking sense gratification, there must be trouble. So if you want to have some happiness, then you have to go through some tapasya. There has to be austerity. That's the nature of this world. If you want anything, you have to engage in some endeavor. And the endeavors for material happiness are troublesome. So if you want to make $1 million, you have to work hard. Whether you're running a business or you're doing a job, you have to work hard, you have to compete. And any source of material happiness lead to this hard struggle for existence. Because we want to be happy, so it leads to that hard struggle for existence. And people strive so hard, and they are compared to a donkey. A donkey, in India sometimes you see donkeys, they're carrying, or even a buffalo, carrying very heavy loads, like they're pulling a cart, and there's all this froth coming out of their mouth. All for, for a donkey, the happiness is maybe a carrot or some grass, which is dangling in front of it. So material endeavor for material happiness is compared to being a donkey. Because, why a donkey? Because one has to work so hard, and the end result is very tiny. And that also doesn't last very long. It's temporary. So an intelligent person thinks, what's the point of this? An intelligent person tries to observe the futility of material existence. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha doshana darshana. That material life is fraught with birth, death, old age and disease. Right? So we see this, we are surrounded by old age. Maybe people we know who are getting old, and it's, old age, even the simple things become very difficult. Like maybe tying your shoelaces, or just bending, or maybe reaching out to something. Simple things become hard. Disease, we all experience that. Birth, troublesome. And ultimately there is death. So an intelligent person thinks, what's the point of all this? And when one gets frustrated on the material plane, then people come to the mental plane. So they engage with philosophy, music, or literature, such endeavors. Scholarship, poetry, sophisticated poetry. But even if someone engaged on the mental plane, they also ultimately get frustrated. Because they're not taking shelter of the Supreme Court. There's no shelter even on the mental plane. Right, so there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavati Akinchana Sarvaya Kunais Tatra Samasate Suraha Hara Bhaktasya Koto Mahatkuna Mano Rathe Nasati Dhavato Vahi Mano Rathe Nasati. So that means Manorathasati means that one has to be driven by one's mental speculations and engage in the law of external energy. So even when we have the mental plane, there is no shelter. And the nature of the mind is wild. The mind jumps from one topic to another. Sankalpa vikalpa, right? So the mind accepts something and it rejects something. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bahu Shakyani Anantasya Budayo Abhisayana, says that the intelligence of one who is absorbed in me is one pointer. And the intelligence of one who is not engaged in Krishna consciousness, in other words, one intelligence who has taken shelter of the mind, is many branched. So the mind and intelligence is jumped from one topic to another. Well, today this will make me happy, tomorrow is that. Maybe today I need to buy this car, so it will give me some happiness. And for some time it gives. And then, no, I need to do something else now. Or I need to engage in this career, but now maybe some other career. So in this way the mind jumps from one subject to another. And because there is no shelter. But when there is shelter of the Supreme Lord Krishna, then the mind is peaceful. And then one can truly develop good qualities. Otherwise, even while being on the mental platform, one does not have any good qualities. And so, even though one might be very exalted from the material estimation, from that perspective, one might be very, very exalted. One might be a professor. We see in society there are many exalted people, like a politician, or university professors, or maybe big corporate job you have, or a big businessman. These are very respected positions in society. But despite having all these positions, ultimately one lacks the higher qualities. And one who is engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness, though from the mundane perspective, they might not have all these exalted credentials, but they have a lot of good qualities. So Prabhupada gives the example in the Nectar of Devotion of an uneducated boy who has gone to university, etc. But they are able to have strong character, and they are able to control their senses. So one is engaged in the process of yoga or bhakti yoga. One will automatically develop all the good qualities of the demigods. So simply by engaging in the process of Krishna consciousness, by coming in contact with the holy name, the deities, the devotees, gradually one starts to develop good qualities. And we see that in society these qualities are lacking. So there's so much greed, strife, so much conflict, and the root cause of all that is a lack of good qualities. So we see this, and that is recognized as well. That's why there is so much compliance and legislation put in place to tackle essentially what is bad qualities, right? Greed, essentially to tackle these base qualities. That's why there's so many task forces, so many programs, to stop all this corruption, etc. So all that stems from bad qualities. So people might be very polished, might speak in a very, they might articulate themselves very well, might speak in very sophisticated tones, they might dress very sophisticatedly, wearing a nice suit or a dress. But if you analyze, at the end of the day, it's all, you know, base qualities. And end of the day, whether it's someone, you know, from blue collar suburb or a white collar suburb, they engage in the same base activities. They engage in drinking, smoking, and womanization. At the end of the day, it comes down to the same. Because one is more sophisticated than the other. But ultimately, there's no difference. So people say it's materialism is the problem in life, in the world. Yes, but that is present in all of us. But unless we engage in yoga, in bhakti yoga, we cannot purify ourselves. So that's in all of us, right? So we have to engage in the cleansing process of Krishna consciousness. Then the heart becomes purified. And then we begin to develop the good qualities of the temple. It's a gradual process. It doesn't mean we're very Bhagavata and suddenly we're, you know, transcendental. It's a gradual process by engaging in the process of Krishna consciousness and by sticking to it for your whole life. Gradually those qualities come. The qualities of the demigods come. Otherwise we are forced to act according to our nature. So even those who are on the mental platform, they are also forced to act to the nature. Everyone is forced to act to the nature. And Krishna says, Nahi Kashtishanti, Jatu Tishtati Karma Krit, Karyate Yavasa Karma, Sarva Prakriti Jayati Nahi. So no one can refrain from doing anything, not even for a moment. Right? So everyone has to act according to their nature. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam talks about Krishna, right? So Srimad Bhagavatam rejects all these mental speculations. So Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't entertain all these mental and so-called philosophical speculations. It rejects it. Dharma purvita kaito atra parma desman saraha. So the Srimad Bhagavatam rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated. Not only religious activities, but even all mundane activities. Anything mundane is rejected by the Srimad Bhagavatam. So all these mental speculations, etc., are rejected. And Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth, Satyam Param Dhimahi, as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, right? So the highest truth is Krishna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srimad Bhagavatam gives us, Srimad Bhagavatam tells us about our relationship with Krishna, the Sambandha. Right? So Sambandha means who we are, what is this world, who is God, and what is our relationship with Krishna and His energy. So that is Sambandha. So the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us our relationship with the Supreme God. And it also teaches us the process to engage in that relationship and to cultivate that relationship. Right? So Srimad Bhagavatam teaches that abhideya and also the prayojana. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the experience of what that relationship is like. So by engaging in Krishna consciousness, Srimad Bhagavatam also gives us that experience. So, and we can feel it when we read the Shastra, when we read Srimad Bhagavatam. We can begin to perceive a taste of the Supreme Lord. And by engaging, more and more engaging in the process, we can attain perfection. So to experience the highest truth, the combination, that's the Prayoshna, and that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is giving. So one who is truly a devotee, they can begin to perceive this truth. As Lord Brahma says in the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Chulita Bhakti Vilochanena Santasdaivaitayashupyanti Yamshama Sundaram Achindra Guna Swarupa Govinda Mahati Purushantamaha Vajami. So there, Lord Brahma says he worships the family of Lord Govinda, who is seen by the devotees whose eyes are anointed with the powerful love of God. So in other words, Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the conclusion, it gives us that experience of seeing Krishna. So the process of Krishna consciousness is a very, a joyful process. By engaging in the process of Krishna consciousness, one can reach this stage in a joyful manner. Whereas the other processes can be dry. So, the other processes are engaging in the process of jnana and yoga. And these processes are usually very dry. So, as I said earlier, most people in today's society are not interested in the Supreme Lord. Most people are not philosophical. They're just engaged in sense gratification, sports, etc. But there are a few people who try to who are a bit philosophical and who try to go a bit deeper. But unfortunately, they read all these shastras that are not coming with, number one, they're not coming with the parampara. They read all these shastras, they're not coming with the parampara. And then they become more confused. So I was looking recently, I think at one university where, I think the Oxford, they teach courses on Vedanta. Right, so I just clicked on the summary on the video, in which they summarize the course. So it was a course on Vedanta. They teach you about Vedanta, and in that the author was saying, the teacher was saying that, the Vedanta has been interpreted by different acharyas, like Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya. Everyone has given their own interpretation. Therefore, it can be interpreted in different ways. And you can also interpret it in the way you like. Our job is just to teach, it's just to give you the different perspectives, but then you can make up your own mind. But, the teacher doesn't realize the context in which the different acharyas came. And when the acharyas came, they came to fulfill a certain mission. And they came to elevate people, right, in a gradual manner. So, but even Shankaracharya ultimately acknowledges Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Narayana is the Supreme Lord. So people, if they try to search the absolute truth, they read various Upanishads. If they come to the Vedas, then they read the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, various texts, and they end up becoming confused. And they come to the conclusion that the Supreme Lord is impersonal. He is an energy, or even worse, he is mundane. They come to the Mayavadi conclusion. So that's the problem with reading so many scriptures that are not coming in the parampara from the chain of discrete succession. So Prabhupada has given us the essence of all the scriptures, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana, which is recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So tomorrow is the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he has recommended the Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Purana. So we have to follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas.
The instructions coming down from the Lord. So our scriptures are the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So if we, when we read these scriptures, they just point to the Supreme Lord. They establish the conclusion and the essence as Krishna. It's very direct. There's nothing else here. And Vadanti Tat Tattva Vidas Jnanam Ostatvas Srimad Bhagavatam 2:11 I think. Vadanti Tat Tattva Vidas Thank you. So the Srimad Bhagavatam establishes that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Krishna is the source of Brahman and Paramatma. So Brahman and Paramatma are coming from Krishna, and they are not the complete knowledge. They are partial realization of Krishna. So someone who is engaging in Brahman realization, which are very few people, hardly anyone. But that is a partial realization of the Supreme Lord. It's not the complete understanding. That is just the beginning of the understanding. But there is more to go. So, some people who engage in jnana, they come to that level of realization. So what is jnana about? Jnana is about analyzing material nature, you know, and coming to through the process of neti-neti and coming to the conclusion that I am not matter, and this material world is constituted of the 24 elements, and beyond that there is the super soul. Right? So most people come to the understanding of that. Some people, and then you might understand that there is Brahman. Brahman, which is the effulgence coming from the Supreme Lord. And in the Ishvamanishad, the devotee prays that, my dear Lord, please remove this Hiranmayana Patra, please remove this covering so I can see you. So behind this effulgence is the Supreme Lord Krishna. He is the source of that effulgence. And within this effulgence, the entire creation is resting. And that effulgence is pure, it is beyond, it has no material contamination or any material qualities. It's nirguna. And Krishna is nirguna too. And then a higher level of realization is the Paramatma realization, which is, means God is within everyone's heart. But that is also not the complete realization. The complete realization is Bhagavan, in that Krishna is the source of Paramatma and Bhagavan. So the Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu is the Paramatma. And Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we've been hearing last couple of weeks by Devamani Swami, is not different from Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not an avatar of the Supreme Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Swayam Bhagavan, is Krishna, not different from Krishna, who appeared roughly 500 years ago to propagate the Sankirtan movement and also to experience the love of Srimati Radharani and to also experience what's the happiness she is feeling. And he has assumed the complexion of Radharani, that golden complexion. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he makes this process of bhakti very accessible, whereas extremely accessible. We are very unqualified in the age of Kali to engage in yoga. Yoga is not an easy process. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he makes it accessible to the lowest of the lowest. We don't have much qualifications. But through the mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, we are able to engage in this process of bhakti, the highest process. So that is made very accessible to us in the lowest of ages, the Kali Yuga is a very troublesome age. And the Kali Yuga is an age full of strife and problems. It's full of conflict. We see there's all sorts of conflict everywhere. At all levels there's conflict. So in this age, in this day and age, we have been given the highest process through the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we bypass the stages of Brahman and Paramatma. We don't have to endeavor for the gradual process of elevation to Krishna consciousness. So the gradual process is you go through Brahman realization, Paramatma, then you come to the Supreme. We go directly to the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is known. Krishna reserves the right to be known by his unalloyed devotees. That's why we take shelter of the devotees. And tomorrow's verse is about taking shelter of a spiritual master. And as Prabhupada ends this purport with taking shelter of a spiritual master. So Krishna is he reserves his right to be known by his devotees. And when we approach someone who knows the absolute truth, then we can know something. Then we can also have a chance. It's like if you want to understand something mundane, you have to approach someone who knows that subject matter. If you want to understand something in IT, you have to go to somebody who is a master in that. Right? You get a certificate, you go through a certification. And that person knows something. Otherwise, if you're doing a course, you want to approach someone who has realization, not just teaching you book knowledge by doing a course that you're doing. Right? So you want someone who has worked in the industry for 10, 20 years, who will share with you their realizations, and which comes from experience. So similarly, a guru, we have to take shelter of a guru because they are engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness. They have accepted the guru in the parampara. And they are engaged in the process. And they have developed those realizations. And they understand the absolute truth. And because they understand, then they can pass that knowledge to you. If we follow in the process and follow the instructions, then we can understand. But if we approach someone else who has no realization, you're not going to progress very further. And the role of a guru is, the guru gives you the essence of Krishna consciousness. So you don't get sidetracked by so many other things. That's why we have to accept the shelter of a spiritual master. And even in the mundane world, if you want to excel in anything, as I said, you have to accept the shelter of someone who has done it, whether it's sports or anything. And then they'll show you the way so you don't get sidetracked by so many things. You don't go in various rabbit holes. So, similarly as Srila Prabhupada, he gave us the Bhaktivedanta purports. Srila Prabhupada gave us the Bhaktivedanta purports so we don't get sidetracked. Otherwise, we can pick up the Srimad Bhagavatam, which doesn't have a commentary, authorized commentary, or even the commentary of the Acharyas. If you don't read Prabhupada's commentary first, it's easy to get lost. So first that's why Prabhupada gave us his commentaries, which are very easily understood. They're written in a very simple way, and they're written for our context. These commentaries are written for our context, in which we are functioning. So by reading these commentaries, we don't get sidetracked, and Prabhupada just brings us, he makes sure that our focus is on Krishna. So when we take shelter of such devotees, then Krishna can be known, right? So bhakti amatma vijanati, yaman yas chasmi tarpata, tato maam tarpato dhyapva, vishadde tarpata. So we can understand Krishna only through devotional service, by taking shelter of the devotees. And when we engage in the process of Krishna consciousness, then everything, the results of everything else is also achieved. One automatically gets liberation. Liberation is the byproduct of devotional service. One does not have to strive for liberation separately. It is automatically achieved. And like some people, they say, I'm so fed up with material life, I want to stop all this. I want this freedom from distress. I want liberation. But one who is engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness, that freedom from distress and ultimately liberation comes automatically. That is a byproduct. So sukham kartamate, the process of Krishna consciousness is a joyful process. Like the four devotees were joyfully chanting and dancing in kirtan. No one looked morose in the room. I was looking at everyone's face and everyone looked so happy. By this process of Krishna consciousness is joyful, by eating prasadam, by dancing, and hopefully in the classes also. Sometimes classes can be, you fall asleep. Hopefully not boring you. But the process of Krishna consciousness is a joyful process. By engaging in seva, one becomes happy, and liberation is a byproduct, and liberation is standing at the door of a devotee. She's standing at the doorstep of a devotee. So a devotee doesn't have to strive for liberation. Like some people, in some processes, they strive, their end goal is mukti, right? It's to strive for mukti. Mukti means freedom from distress. So once you have achieved freedom from distress, what are you going to do with your life? So Krishna consciousness is about the positive activities of the soul. It's the real activities of the soul. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. So Krishna consciousness is, yes, you stop suffering, you stop. Liberation means to stop material activities. That's what liberation is, to stop all mundane activities. And when you stop that, then you have to engage in spiritual activities. So what does that mean for us? That means we can go through work, have a job, everything. But if the purpose of all that is to engage in Krishna consciousness, is to support our spiritual lifestyle, then these activities are also spiritual activities, going through work, etc. So you effectively stop mundane activities. If the purpose of all that, as Maharaj was mentioning yesterday also, the spiritual economics, if we go to work to give Krishna consciousness to ourselves and to the world, then those activities become transcendental, they are spiritual, they are not mundane activities, though they might look like mundane. So to an untrained eye, to someone who has no understanding of spiritual life, a devotee going to work, or a non-devotee going to work, maybe driving a car, wearing a suit, doing the same job, sitting next to each other, externally they look the same, but internally there's a huge difference of consciousness. The consciousness is totally different. One is going with the consciousness to become spiritually advanced, other is going to get to selfishly enjoy for themselves and their family. And the other one's going to become Krishna conscious and to also share it with others to their best of their ability in terms of resources, intelligence, etc. So externally it looks the same, but internally there's a big difference. So the liberation is automatically achieved by one who cultivates Krishna consciousness. So unless we come to the point of understanding Bhagavan, it's all Shrama Eva Hi Kevala. Right? So it's ultimately it's a waste of time. So if our human form of life is not, if by the time of death we don't understand God, then is Shrama Evaikyama. This life has been a waste. Though we might be very successful, you know, I might have a nice home, a nice family, nice children, very, very educated children, good standing in society, you're well known amongst your family as a successful person, you know, you're seen in that way. But ultimately it's all a zero, because the human life hasn't been used, in a human life we haven't realized God or Krishna. So unless we come to that realization, it's a waste. And unfortunately, that's the case for the majority of people in the world. And that's where we need to share this knowledge as much as we can. To make our life successful and also other people's lives successful. So material prosperity is not success. Having a big balance, having many investment properties, that is success from a mundane perspective. But from a spiritual perspective, that without Krishna is a failure. It's a big failure. And then at the time of death, it amounts to nothing. And people also regret at the time of death. Even Steve Jobs, right? He was very successful, the founder of Apple. You can hear his last words, what he had to say. Now there's some, you know, some people say, he didn't say to that extent, but he had some realizations at the end of his life. He said, I can't remember exactly, but along the lines of, he said something like, I'm just sitting here in the hospital bed, you know, looking, staring at death. Basically, he said, all this is what's the point of all this? All this success? And his realization was, again, because he didn't have any spiritual knowledge, his realization was one should engage, one should spend one's time in more in family relationships, look after your family, etc. That's not spiritual. But of course, he was so engaged in the material pursuit of success, and he built Apple. He said, I did all this, but I have no time for my family. Basically, that's what he said. And it's, there's more happiness in spending time with your family. Okay, true. But as I discussed before, even animals are doing that. Right? Even animals are engaged in looking after their family. There's nothing spiritual about that. It's important to look after the family. Even as devotees, we have to be good husbands, wives, to look after our children. But there's nothing spiritual about that if there is no Krishna consciousness in it. And that family life, if devoid of Krishna consciousness, it is leads to frustration, and it is the Grihamedi. Right? Grihamedi means one who is in the deep dark well of household life. If there is no Krishna consciousness, there's no spirituality, then one is like someone who has fallen in a deep, dark well. Most of you are from India, maybe you've seen a well, right? Have you seen a well? The wells, they're, because the water is so low, they have to dig very deep. And usually there's no lights in the well. Most of those wells are also, they don't have a good boundary. You can fall in, right? And if you fall in, it's very difficult to come out because the walls are slippery and there's no support. You can't come out unless someone throws a rope. And these wells are generally in secluded places in a village. So when someone falls in, you can cry for help, but you'll be very lucky if someone hears you. So household life, mundane household life is like that. You're in a well because you might be in a nice palatial home or a nice, you know, apartment or a house. But your whole life is just engaged in making money, family, society, friendship, taking the kids to exercise or swimming lessons, this and that. And the whole life just goes in working. Next day you're going to work and life just passes like this. And even one might think that, what's the point of all this? But you might, even if you're frustrated, you might cry for help, but no one will hear you. Everyone's engaged in the same pursuits, and even if you cry out for something, they'll say, what's wrong with you? what's wrong with you if you're not thinking like us? So it's very difficult to seek spirituality in such a situation, unless one gets the mercy of devotees. So householder life is compared to like that. It's a deep dark well. So that's a waste of time. If one might be successful as a householder, but if you don't engage in Krishna consciousness and try to be a pure devotee, it's all a waste of time. So that's human life is meant to engage in devotional service. That is the purpose of life. There is no other purpose. And that's the opportunity we've been given. We're very fortunate to have that opportunity through the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to give it to as many people as possible and make their life successful. It's not to put anyone down. It's not to put people who are not engaged in Krishna. It's not to look down upon them. That's not the objective of this class. To, you know, you walk out of this and look down upon people. That's not the idea. We're talking about this, so for our own understanding and purification, and to show compassion to others, rather not looking down on them. Because we are not pure devotees ourselves, right? I'm struggling myself in so many ways. Doesn't mean what I'm saying, I realize it. I'm struggling myself, so it's to show compassion to others and to practice ourselves. I'll leave it there. Do you have any questions or comments or any corrections?
Yeah, how you're saying that we need to look after the family. You know, like people in Steve Jobs' story, as you were saying, it's kind of, you know, what I've seen in this family. It's become a trend that people like to help people, like to do philanthropy, altruism, or help family, you know, be good to others. They spread, but then, you know, when you tell, you know, you need to do it to God, somehow they don't connect it. They don't want to, because we don't know. Can you tell something why people are interested to do, help the family, or the nation, society, community, but then they don't least.
Yeah, because the default position of the conditioned living entity in the material world is one of rebellion against the Supreme Lord. It's to try to be the supreme enjoyer. It's to try to be God. So that is our default position. That is our disease state in the material world. And that's the reason we have come here in the mundane world, because we don't want to do anything with Krishna or God. We don't. Because if we accept God as a person, that means then we have to surrender to Him. That's what it means to accept someone as a person. If you accept someone as a person, that means they have likes, they have dislikes, they do things, they have activities, they have pastimes, they have a name, they have a form. And then one has to interact with them. And because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, one is not to accept the instructions of God. Because if we accept the instructions of God, one has to be subservient and take a humble role. Whereas in the material world, everyone is trying to be the master in different ways, whether in a big way or a small way. But everyone is trying to be the master. And we are trying to enjoy by controlling, as Devanand Maharaj was mentioning yesterday, that in order to enjoy this world, we have to control. Right? Any enjoyment, whether it is big or small, we have to have a degree of control. So, Ishwara Aham Bhogi. Right? So in the material world, everyone is trying to be the Ishwar or the master. You know, in different ways. Maybe the wife is trying to control the husband by her glances or words. Or you know, the man is trying to be the Ishwar at work, trying to boss around everyone. Or amongst one's, you know, friend circle, they're trying to be the, everyone looks up to you. So that way we find happiness different. We find enjoyment by controlling. And Krishna's instructions are contrary to that. That's why they're not attractive. Right? Krishna's instructions are saying, you're not the enjoyer. Ultimately they're saying, you're not the enjoyer, you're a servant. And hearing that one is a servant is not attractive. Yes, in the corporate world you have servant leadership. These days they're talking about servant leadership. But, you know, yes, there's servant leadership, but ultimately it's about controlling. You can be a leader, so yes, they understand I have to serve my people who are in my team or who are under me. But the step one is trying to get happiness by orchestrating or controlling one who's under me on certain situations. So the Krishna's instructions are the jiva is insignificant, we are a servant of the Lord, and one should render service in humility, right? So that message is just not palatable. It's not attractive. And more than that, it is saying that one has to control one's senses. And the modern world is, let your senses loose. Do what you feel like doing, do whatever your mind says. There's no inhibitions, there's no restrictions. Have a relationship with anyone. If it doesn't work out with this, go to the next one. Try this out, try that out. You know, drink this, drink that. Whatever makes you happy at the end of the day. So let your senses loose. A very promiscuous lifestyle. So the whereas we are saying that one should, you know, stop eating meat, stop drinking alcohol, stop engaging in gambling, and stop engaging in illicit sex. So this is seen as very orthodox and restrictive by people. They think you're an orthodox Hindu. You know, from which age have you come? But as Krishna says, these are the regulative principles of freedom. If we control our senses, then one becomes very powerful and one achieves freedom from distress. One comes to the human platform. And then one can understand something higher. But this message is not very attractive. So that's why people don't like it. And that's okay, if they don't like it, it's fine. We should not compromise the message. Doesn't mean we compromise. If they don't like it, so be it. Prabhupada said, I'm after the moon, I'm not after the stars. I rather have the moon, I rather have quality than quantity. Yeah. Now sometimes they're like some devotees, very prominent. They have millions of followers on YouTube. But if you hear the message, it's all airy fairy speak. There's no spiritual content whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's just mundane goodness. Which you're even, what's his name? Tony Robbins? Forgot the big motivational speaker.
Yeah.
It's basically what he's saying.